This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Homeroom, yeah, here we are, gathered around, getting ready for a beautiful week. But you always got to start the week with gathering everybody together for homeroom to talk a little bit about the things that are going on. Johnny Lupinacci, Jess, my friends, how are the two of you doing? Johnny, you first.
I'm doing great, man. I mean, it is like a daily responsibility to just breathe and, you know, and function at a regulated level for my students, for the, you know, the young people that I coach, for my family. Probably all of us can relate. We're headed into a big election. I mean, it is just getting more intense and intense as we go. I mean, I'm hopeful and optimistic, but at the same time, it's like I can't ignore that the energy has got me like turned up in a good way. But also, you know, sometimes good energy can be too much energy too. So remembering to just take a breather, stay regulated. And let's go, because either way, and believe me, I am hoping with every cell in my body it goes one particular way. But either way, there's a lot of work to do. We're going to keep doing that work. And so, you know, I keep taking those deep breaths and having that mantra of like, the work isn't changing. It might be different, but it's not necessarily changing. We got a lot of work to do. Let's keep doing it. And let's take care of ourselves and one another. Tim, Jess, how about you two? How are you doing?
Little on the dysregulated side, I will be completely honest. As we heard from Educators Amplified this past Saturday, here in the swing state of Wisconsin, we're all a bit titched up. And, you know, working in political talk radio, you know, it's a little, we're all a little extra amped here. We're all a little excited and we're all a little nervous. I won't say all. I'm a little nervous here. I'm a little nervous. I'm a little titched up. But, you know, election is tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Uh-oh. Well, Tim, you're in another swing state. How are you?
Yeah, I'm in another swing state. Like I said, I tell you what, if I get one more, which I know
you're
going to
get another.
I know. The text messages, the emails, the voicemails, you know, and again, nothing about which, so in mine, it's Bernie Moreno, Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is the senator hoping to hold on to the blue, you know, wall. I don't know if you call it a blue wall, but as far as I know, at least if you're only paying attention to the media, neither one of these guys has anything positive to offer the world.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, right? And so you talk about being titched up or how you say that. It's like, of course, the anxiety, nothing about this election has any type of, you know, boy, this is going to be a wonderful result. Things are going to be sweet. Things are going to be, you know, regulated. We're going to move into it. No, it's just like if this guy gets elected, oh, all hell will break loose and all the demons of hell will actually be released on America.
That's not like if the underworld could actually come to the surface, we might be better off.
But anyway, I'm just saying, it's just like I've had enough, and I actually am looking forward, hopefully with the fingers crossed, to the results. But you know, speaking of the election, Jess, so we got a little bit of election news.
A little election news. Let's jump into it, huh?
Let's do it.
First off, K-12 dive. What's on state ballots for education in the 2024 elections? As voters make their way to the polls on November 5th to cast their ballots in the U.S. presidential election, many around the country will also be voting on state or local education issues. States are proposing measures to allocate funding for education in various ways, such as through bonds or reallocating lottery funds. Constitutional amendments related to school choice are also top ballot issues, as our education leadership changes. Here are three of the education-related issues facing voters on Election Day. School choice, school finance, and school leadership. Now, I just want to pull our attention to this one paragraph that was really interesting regarding school finance. In Colorado, Proposition KK would levy a 6.5% tax on firearms, with proceeds going to mental health support for at-risk youth and for veterans, as well as school safety and gun violence prevention programs. The Colorado General Assembly estimates this would bring in about $39 million in its first year.
I wonder what the NRA thinks about this state issue. First, address the concept, though, too. Johnny, states issues, school, we've put it out there multiple, many times when it comes to education and legal and policy. Remember, it's a state issue. And so all of these topics, school leadership, school finance, school choice, are going to be decided through individual state ballots. This thing, though, in Colorado, I say this is our best potential effort in the current atmosphere, environment. This is gun control in a way that says, you know what? We can't stop people from having guns, but if you're going to buy them, we're going to tax you, and then we're going to take that tax money. We're going to put that tax money to good use. I could see Johnny looking at going, I don't know that this is a positive or not. Okay, I know it's not positive necessarily, but the idea of going, if these guns are going to be sold, we're going to skim some money out, because God knows every time one of these guns are sold, it results in some form of mental health, some form of gun restriction, school violence. And you know what? We're going to put that money at least into some form of prevention, mental health. I like the approach to say, you know what? We might not be able to regulate guns, but we can tax them, and we can use that money to hopefully maybe educate and elevate and at least stop people from using guns inappropriately. Too much, Johnny?
I mean, I think your optimism is adorable in this case. And maybe I'm wrong in the sense that maybe this is a step towards actual policy that makes our classrooms and communities safer. Again, remember a couple of things about my politics. I'm not anti-gun. I actually think that it is part of our rights and it is unique. But I actually am pro-regulation of the kinds of guns and the ways we might have access to those and the sort of freedoms around that. And I put loose square quotes around those freedoms, because it shouldn't just be anything goes when it comes to something that's as dangerous as the kinds of guns we have in mass in our communities, combined with defunding mental health and these things. So I think, Tim, I'm going to expose a little bit as an ex-smoker, somebody who's quit the addictive thing. I'm going to remind you that taxing cigarettes didn't stop us smokers from going and buying them. Right. So it doesn't change the access. It doesn't actually change the amount of guns in our community. It's just saying, like, hey, here's an opportunity to make more money, which is also why we have a gun problem in this country, because it's an industry like selling bikes or like selling hoodies, sweatshirts or headphones or anything. It's seen as a commodity and not as one that should have any regulation because of the way that it's also dangerous in improper use in our community. So yes to more education around safety and proper use of guns. I would like to see actual policy that limits what kinds of guns we can actually have in our communities in mass or even in general, right? And I'm not sure that just making the taxes harder, like hey, they're going to cost you more money. I don't think it's the cost.
No. And I am not saying that
money off the issue.
Yeah, I'm not saying that driving up the cost is going to actually stop people from buying guns, because you're right. The cigarette one you put out there, again, didn't stop anybody. In fact, still isn't stopping people, maybe stopping some people from starting potentially.
Well, but actual policies and some
policies, yeah.
Laws around it did. And I also say I love the idea of taxing things that we know people are going to want and putting that money towards education. Let's look in the same state of Colorado at the, you know, the weed money,
there right? You go.
And like and the big coffers of extra taxation on that stuff that has and is going into schools and into, you know, improvement of certain aspects of the state's well-being. And so I think, I mean, there's definitely a recipe here. But to me, Tim, it just tells me it's like, hey, we're going to up the taxes on it because we know people are buying more guns.
Sure. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. But you know what? And because of this, though, the idea that we can divert $39 million in the state of Colorado towards mental health support, gun violence prevention, and veterans. Okay, you know what? At least it's moving in the right direction. Colorado, I say you go for it. Vote yes on Proposition KK. Lots of other things, though. School choice, school leadership. I don't know. What are we going to say about school choice? Guess what? It's on the ballot. Johnny, are you surprised it's on the ballot in Colorado, Kentucky, Nebraska right now, all voting on some form of, you know what it is, giving public monies to citizens to send their kids to private schools. That's what this is all about. The citizens get to vote for this. If there's any past history to use as a projection, when voters get the opportunity to vote on school choice, they typically vote it down. And so the idea that these are on the ballot, some people are like, this shouldn't even be on the ballot. I know they maybe shouldn't even be on the ballot, but history tells us that when you put these on a ballot, we then get full exposure as to going, people do not want school choice. Colorado, Kentucky, Nebraska. I don't know, Johnny, your thoughts?
I mean, Tim, I think it's more complicated than this again. And you got to, and if you're a voter out there, you got to really read closely and you got to get into your voter guides. And you got to know the facts on these issues, because if school choice ballot is also a green light or opening of the door for more charter schools or more private schools, which isn't always the case in a school choice ballot election. Sometimes it's just the right and the ability to choose a school that's not in the community you live in. And I'm going to tell you, Tim, as someone who's lived in communities by the only, like, that's where I was born, that's where I was. And the school is not safe and it's not great. Should I be able to have that opportunity to go to a different school? In theory and in big picture, yeah, we should be making all of our public schools great. However, flat line, they're not.
No, they're not.
And so I kind of make sure you dig into the issue. Make sure it's not language that's saying, hey, you have a choice, but really it's not choice. It's just a way to fund more private school vouchers and things like that. But in the case of it being true that it locks you into having to go to school at a school that's not safe or that's not good, I don't believe anybody should be in that position. And I actually believe it's our human right and it's a children's right to have access to a high quality education. And so if my neighborhood can't provide that, I should be able to choose to go to a place that has that for me, for my child, for anyone. We don't lock people into where they have to work. This isn't communism, as much as sometimes you Marxists out there want it to be. This is America, right?
You, man. So
you get to choose. However, I'm putting it out there, Tim. So sadly, choice has been utilized as a campaign, as a misleading word. And it's really meant funding more charter and private schools.
More charter and private schools that takes away money from the public schools. And when you say if you've got a, you know, kind of faltering public school, you got to figure out what's going on. And I tell you, this is the thing though, Johnny, taking money away from struggling public schools does not make them better. The reality though, what you're pointing out, it's, yes, parents, kids, everybody, you have a right. You have a right. You have a right to an incredibly well-funded public education. However, me as a parent, I do not have the right to take your tax dollars and use them to put my kids in private schools. I think, you know, again, here, there's some subtleties here, obviously. I
don't think that's the actual crux of these, of all of these ballots.
No, because, no, they're all different.
Yeah. We're saying, get in there and read them closely because you got to separate it out. Are you green lighting that what Tim is explaining is really, you know, further distancing the haves and the have nots. And we ought not to be practicing that. But also, we need our public schools to be great.
Yeah,
we do. if they're not, where do you go? Because I'm telling you, you don't ideally get to do eighth grade six times. So you can't be like, well, that time wasn't at a good school, but I hope they start funding my school better so that I can learn and I'm safe. I mean, if your school is unsafe and not able to perform its duty, we should be funding it. But for too many kids, that's not actually the case.
Eighth grade, more than a few times. Just think of how awesome you would be playing eighth grade football, though.
You'd age out before you were able to.
So much going on. Hey, make sure you're out there, though, looking at all those voting issues dealing with public education. And whatever you're doing, though, make sure you're in some way supporting public education. That's Jess, right. We got one more news story, though.
We do have one more news story. Let's dig into it. K-12 Dive, Education Department releases highly anticipated AI toolkit for schools.
Hey-o.
The U.S. Department of Education's Office of Educational Technology released its highly anticipated guidance to help K-12 leaders integrate artificial intelligence into their school districts.
Yes.
The AI toolkit's development was prompted by President Joe Biden's October 2023 executive order, which called for his administration to create resources that would help teachers implement the technology. The new federal AI resource comes as more districts look to use the technology in their classrooms or for business operations. While almost half of states have released their own K-12 AI guidance, education industry leaders continue to stress the need for more uniform advice from the federal government.
Well, we've been talking about AI, and we said, you know, the need for policies, the fact that the federal government through the U.S. Department of Education and the Office of Technology putting out, you know, some form of guidance on what we do in K-12 schools with AI. Yeah, we know we need this. I'm always, though, kind of thinking about this as Johnny, you know, we're talking about the issue that last week, the student that was accused of using AI and then they failed, they didn't get into the right school. And now the parents are suing because there weren't AI guidance and policies. You know, this is the reality of the AI world we're living in. So for the federal government to at least put out some form of an ability to steer us in a direction. Now, the question will be, though, will the states, and we say there are at least a few states out there that are doing this on their own, because Johnny, as we point out again, guess what? It is actually the state's responsibility to take this on and do this work anyway. I don't know. Is it too much from the Department of Education to drop guidance suggestions, or is this good practice, Johnny?
Well, I think it's best of both worlds. Okay. I mean, education is a state, right? But so much funding does come from federal policy and from, and I think it's important, as we've said, it is a little bit of a mess right now. You know, it is an educational tool. It is also a workplace skill that our students need and that we have to engage in. It's like AI is part of what we do on almost a daily basis now in most professions, if not at least a weekly. So our students need to learn about it. It's part of their career readiness. It's part of their learning. How we teach, the kinds of assignments and the things that we'll do in classrooms, they got to shift and change with new technologies. And so I think it is helpful to have something from the federal level that also says, hey, states, I know you may or may not be responding to this, but you should have it on deck and you should probably be responding to it. So as a nation here, we're also saying that you have to have some policies. You have to have some understanding of where and how it's used, what's the appropriate use of it, and where you're being relevant to career readiness for all of our students in this country. So I do see it as a matter of national security.
Yeah, you do. Have
prepared and educated students, and AI is part of that. So I know there's a lot, and Tim, you and I beef over AI. So I know there's a lot of AI haters out there. I'm not one of them. I believe it's a powerful tool. Tim believes it's a cultural, like, you know, ideology of sorts. It's a religion. But just teasing him. But no, you know, I'm glad to see this happening. And I know at my own institution and a lot of the schools and the districts I work with, I see these kinds of surveys out right now. How often do you use AI? How do you? And I appreciate as well that they're forwarded by this question and this sort of statement that says, hey, we want to know how AI is part of your workspace, how in your life. Do not worry. We don't think it's cheating, because ultimately, as a culture, we've immediately pushed to, well, if you're using AI, you're cheating or you're somehow performance enhancing. It's like we are a culture of catching people doing wrong, not figuring out how we can work together better. And so that cultural sort of bad side of us is coming out with AI. So I'm glad to start seeing it become less stigmatized. Hey, how are you using AI? And it's okay to say you are.
Right.
How are you engaging with these technologies? We want to know. We're not here to punish you for putting them to use in your courses. So I'm seeing these surveys come out, and I know that that's to better form what kind of policies and supports we're putting into our state and our community in education to make sure that we are doing a better job as teachers, because it's here. It's here to stay. And I think it's improving our profession, but also, like any great tool, it has the potential to do damage. So I like that we're spending time figuring out how we're going to harness this power for good.
Awesome. Well, There we go. Coming into the election, everybody, make sure you are out there and doing your civic duty tomorrow. And yeah, everybody, hold tight, man. Loving this Busted Pencils homeroom. Make sure too, hey, and actually, if you want to tell us how you are using AI, 608-557-8577 is the mailbag. You can let us know. And hey, tell you what though, man, loving this. Johnny, makes me think though, is this the opportune time to now talk about our moment of zen? It is the citizenry rather than the government that is the ultimate source of power and the locomotive that pulls the train of government in the direction of equality and justice. Thanks for listening to Homeroom Busted Pencils. Stay in touch. Follow us around Wednesday. Classes in session. Can we put together a whole bunch of interesting topics? You can bet. Just remember, though, keep those pencils sharpened and make sure you're always busting them.